Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And oh my goodness, where to begin? Do we start with a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas? Do we talk federal politics? Do we talk U.S. politics? Or do we come all the way back to municipal by-elections?
Let's do it all on Unspun, Jody.
Let's go.
All right, stop at the top. Start at the top. Let's go to the top of the top of the top of the blah, blah,
blah. Okay, top of the top of the top is actually nothing to do with anything except for I promised this last week. Yes. I have signed the contract with Invictus Games. So I'm officially, okay. I'm announcing it here first. No, I'll be on the broadcast team. I'll be doing the world feed opening ceremony, then doing some a daily show, more information to come, the announcements to come. Make cool. sure you get your tickets to the opening ceremony, because in the next week or so, there is going to be an announcement that might just fill BC Place all the way to the brim.
Oh, where do we get tickets? Ticketmaster or is it?
Yeah. Invictus Vancouver Whistler 2025. If you put that in the search bar, Vancouver Whistler, Invictus Games Vancouver Whistler 2025. It'll pop up. Everything you need to know there. It's super wicked.
I'm hoping my connections will get me some free tickets.
I'll do what I can. I'm really not that connected.
I'm kidding.
I'm super excited. Yeah, it's a very good cause. In fact, it's the opposite of doing like a big Olympics event. It's like Katy Perry's coming for free. Like she's coming. Of course, they have to do the setup for her. That's got some hard costs associated, but she's taking no talent fee. Nelly Furtado. I mean, Jelly Roll. There's so many. They're all coming for
jelly
free.
Roll. You lost me a Jelly Roll. I'm lost.
But hey, the kids love it. The kids love it. Adaptive sport.
I do love Jelly Rolls.
You do.
A good Jelly Roll from Granville Island's great Lee's Donut.
Close enough.
Jelly Donut. Okay.
Close enough.
Well, that's okay, great. So exciting. Congrats.
Thank you. Where do you want to start? Do you want to go international? Let's start with the ceasefire that is teetering on the top of a precarious perch at this moment.
Yeah, great news. It reminds me of the Carter years. Right at the very end, he gets what he wants. You know, it's very interesting to see both the Trump team and the Biden team sort of working together. Very weird and surreal, because it wasn't going to be good for Trump to keep this war going, given what's going on in America. So get it done. He's already taking credit for it, of course. You know, I think it'll work. There's going to be a lot of anger in Palestine. I mean, I don't think these people are. You know, one of the points that the U.S. is saying is we got to solve this because it's just breeding more terrorists, basically. So.
I mean, the struggle is real in Gaza. It's like 90% of the population has been displaced more than once. And the piece that I took, other than the fact that the hostages will be released, I mean, let's be clear, that is unimaginable pain for the families of those innocents who were taken hostage, mm-hmm. equal to the innocence of the people who had no power over Hamas ruling Gaza, right? And knowing that on Sunday, when this kicks in, if it does, please let it kick in, the ceasefire, 600 trucks of aid per day will roll into Gaza. That's food and water, medical supplies and building materials and the ability to, you know, just give people shelter and a safe place for the 6 weeks of the ceasefire. And if it holds, then it goes beyond then. But I mean, humanitarian relief, I fear what we might learn when the borders open up and aid starts rolling in into Gaza. It's just
also a surreal war, isn't it? I mean, you know, you sit there and then you say, okay, Sunday we're going to stop this war, and both sides are going to agree, and they're going to stop bombing each other for at least a while anyways. And let those food trucks come in, let them do their thing. You know, when a week earlier, you couldn't even imagine that. It's just like, what kind of world is this?
And one that we look just south of the border, it looks like a war zone, but it's not. It's certainly climate related when we look at the fires in Los Angeles, the disinformation around those fires.
Oh, yeah.
So many of the right, far right talking points of it's infrastructure because the fire hydrants ran out of water. Guess what? Fire hydrants are not built in municipalities to fight wildfires. Like, how insane is this time where the noise isn't, where there is noise at all when something as horrifying is happening?
to judge, I feel, in real time when things are in the midst of it, it's really who's at fault here. Can we just put the fires out? Like, focus on that. But this political opportunity that people use I've never seen it this bad before when something this devastating is happening and people are starting to judge before, you know, armchair critics telling you how you should best fight a fire. I mean, we know up here in BC what it's like, and we've analyzed what's wrong. And a lot of the mistakes that were made down there were the same mistakes that we're making up here. Proper infrastructure, of course, more, you know, more things to use, like where, how do you, you look at me, because we went through this and we were covering this when we were at CKNW at the time, and both of us, and you know, things like small towns where they put the whole sprinkler system on the roofs and what impact that made, all these kinds of things that we know make a difference. But ask yourself right now, given the fires, how many years ago was that now, those fires in BC?
2021. So Fort Mac was before that, but Lytton ones. The BC ones were 4 years ago.
And how's Lytton doing? Still under.
There's one house built, I think, because they have to remediate it. It's full of toxic debris, right? Exactly. Everything melt into the ground. What do you do? LA's like 12,000 of those.
Exactly. And how do we? So we've had 4 years. What's happened since? The question we should be asking: Hey, what about what we talked about? Because that, you know, that's happening in LA, and it's probably going to happen again if we don't. We know we did a report on what we need to do. We know exactly what needs to be done to solve the problem.
Yeah.
Obviously, climate change is a tough one to solve, but there's lots of things that we could do in the meantime, and that cost money. And you know, have they been done? Or are we just going to find out again in real time that we didn't do those things? And you know, but then you, but of course, when the thing is happening, it's about saving lives and it's about pulling up your sleeves,
coming together
and together and all that stuff.
Which we must point out, the community. I lived in Los Angeles for just under 2 years, a long time ago. And it was wild, as I told you last week. You know, it's kind of like standing at the corner of, you know, Georgia and Granville and having the fire come at you from West Van, Burnaby, and Richmond. Like it's downtown. Like you can
Hollywood is at risk.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable and still at risk and will be at risk maybe for weeks because the Santa Ana winds keep coming up and whatever. But just the sheer volume and one of the things that was pointed out today that to me online that, you know, watching the people who are coming together and sharing everything from, you know, helping each other's pets to if your child lost their blankie or teddy in the fire and trying to soothe the innocents that are involved in this. It's really something to watch the community come together. But what about all the people who worked in the Palisades for the people who had the big houses or had the big houses in Malibu? Like there are landscaping and pool and nannies and housekeepers. Like there's an entire other arm of Los Angeles that maybe hasn't been impacted by fire, but are all out of work. Like there's a lot going
on, which brings up, I think, because we're pre-show talking about this and Polyev announcing today about bringing into Canada and funding and federal infrastructure and federal funding of anything, because obviously this is going to take a lot of money to solve in Los Angeles, just like it does. You know, for years we've been talking about homelessness, housing, drug addiction in Canada, and how we have to step up. There's only one solution to that, and that's everybody's got to come together and spend some money on these issues. And Mark Carney, I saw on Jon Stewart, he hasn't announced, but he kind of announced on Jon Stewart, The Daily Show. You know, he's talking about the fact that we need he said 6 million homes built which I think the number you and I have talked about in the show. I mean, we've done the math. You need to build, and we've gone 20 years of not building on a national level that we used to build at of 50 to 60,000 units per year over the last 20, 30 years. That's the math. So, you know, and we're letting 400,000 people move into Canada every year for the last 5 years. So it's like the math is there. So we have a potential leader announcing on Jon Stewart. Another one is going to announce by the time you see the show, they might have announced.
Waiting, but their messaging is already coming out. We already know, actually,
Polyev,
with Pierre Polyev in Delta, for those who aren't watching in BC, that's south of Vancouver. He was doing a media availability there to make a couple of announcements. But when he references the federal government, where before it was Justin Trudeau's NDP Liberals, right? That was before. Yeah. Now it is the Trudeau, Freeland, Carney liberals every time. So obviously reference to Chrystia Freeland, who has yet to announce. Everybody expects that she will do so prior to the tsunami of news that is going to come on Tuesday when incoming President Donald Trump is inaugurated. So it's the expectation that Freeland will announce before Tuesday. Mark Carney could announce as early as today. We're starting to see a lot of activity on his social media. You know, all of the signals. Out. Christy Clark bailed because her French is not good enough, she said.
And she said she was not a conservative and she was a conservative. I'm like, oh my God. Just,
yeah, not the best foot forward for Christy Clark.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I let the Trudeau, was it Trudeau? What is it? Trudeau?
Trudeau, Freeland, Carney, Liberals.
Liberals. I love it because obviously there's a double entendre of the word Carney. If you live in a small town in anywhere in Canada, the people who work at the local fairs are called carnies. I don't
know. Right. Come right up here. Step right up. Try this for your dinner. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's sometimes considered a derogatory, you know, definition of those kind of people.
Carnival worker.
My nephew is actually a carny. He's learned to be a truck driver for them. But, you know, it's an interesting, I mean, it works. That kind of stuff works. You were saying earlier before the show about how he keeps saying the same things over and over. And I talk about that a lot with politics. You know, you and comedians do this all the time. And I talk about this when I train politicians. Don't feel like you need to reinvent every single time you talk to somebody. You can say the same things again and again and again and again because not everybody has heard what you've said. And so don't try to be creative, especially in the moment. Just say the same thing. If you've got a good message, just say it again and again and again. And of course, we know that federal conservatives have a massive PR and team behind them to messaging team to put all this together. They analyze this. They look at it. They look at the. They know the personality of Poilievre and say, okay, he's very good at this kind of playful banter, using
alliteration.
He's very, very good at it, and he knows how to use it as a weapon. So you know that's what it'll be for now, and then the tying the Trudeau to them is smart because. Obviously, Trudeau's rate, you know, his polling is terrible. So anybody you can tie the Liberals and Trudeau together forever, you know, even for, you know, when I was in the 2017 election, it wasn't Christy Clark wasn't the candidate for the leader. Everybody kept saying, oh, Christy Clark. Oh, yeah, we hate, I mean, she's not involved in this election. So, okay. But the messaging kept saying these are just the same old people. Don't trust them. It's very effective.
It's very effective. And that is clearly where the federal conservative leader is going with what he perceives, the two that he perceives to be the biggest threat to his campaign, right? That's how you identify who he's targeting. He also said a couple of other interesting things for the sake of sharing that, what he is promising Canadians with regard to facing down incoming threat of tariffs from Donald Trump. He first, of course, he's sticking to the axe the tax, the carbon tax. He'll get rid of the consumer carbon tax upon becoming prime minister, if that should happen. He is also calling his mandate a bring it home mandate, where he is going to loosen the taxation on the hardworking Canadians. Like when the capital gains tax was brought in last spring by Chrystia Freeland, he said, because she was finance minister and deputy prime minister. Anyway, but he's like, that's punishing people who are building homes. And of course, he's standing in front of a bunch of construction workers who have the Tyvek or whatever it's called, you know, on the building behind him. How many of these people will be, you know, bringing home less, so we will bring it home for Canadians. He said he would immediately remove that capital gains tax at the consumer level. I'm not sure if
for all meant, of us. Yeah, the capital gains on your, say you sell your property, your second property, all that. The 60% number, 69%, whatever the number was.
Right, that bit of, so it wouldn't just be like all capital gains, but that new capital gains tax. And then he blames the federal Liberals for why Trump has the power he does right now, because we give our oil and gas in its raw form, crude form, to be processed in the United States and then sold back to us. So he's like, had we had those pipelines to Asia Pacific and to Europe, we could have taken down Putin and we could have, you know, been a wealthy, much wealthier country, which kind of speaks to the Danielle Smith piece of the Canada First, right? He wants to unite Canadians and stop this divisiveness that the Liberals are doing to the country.
Well, we have tried. I mean, the pipeline issue is ridiculous because we know that because we live in BC, we know how challenging it is to build pipelines. You know, the First Nations, the consultation, you literally cannot actually build it unless you get buy-in by all the groups. You cannot actually construct because they won't let you do it. So that pipeline argument, and the only other pipeline is because of the Democrats downstate that they shut down the big pipeline in that was going to go down through the middle of the U.S. So I think that, and then there's the refinery. We know that here in BC, David Black, newspaper publisher, tried to set up a refinery up in Prince Rupert, up in that area in Kitimat. But the cost, it was ridiculous. And he was trying to get like financing.
Billions and billions.
And so I don't understand. So the private sector haven't found a way to do it, which David Black tried. Then what are you saying, Polyev? You're going to say to the, is the government going to start building refineries? That sounds like nationalization of oil. Is that what you're saying, Pierre, conservative candidate? And then his comment, was it corporate welfare?
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go next. He's like, and by the way, I forgot to announce that I will be stopping all of the corporate welfare for companies who need to be bailed out. That will immediately halt, and that will fill the coffers for that money that has been going for corporate welfare will go to fill the coffers where monies will be lost in axing the carbon tax and the capital gains tax. Therefore, the budget will be neutral.
I mean, two things. One, on the corporate welfare, I mean, you're basically attacking Quebec because most of the corporate welfare goes to Quebec-based corporations, Air Canada, for example. Right. So you'd basically be putting Air Canada out of business in Canada and a lot of other corporations.
Bombardier.
A lot of these big companies based in Quebec getting a massive amount of funding from the federal government. So he's basically saying goodbye. Basically, I think he must be saying, I don't care about the Quebec vote. It's going to go Bloc or whatever he thinks is, I don't know what he thinks, or go Liberal. He must be relying, he's going to have to then rely on Ontario. And then what was the other one? It was the corporate welfare and...
And neutralizing the budget.
That's what, you know, Gordon Campbell did a thing where he said, if we're going to remove one, if you're going to bring in a new idea, you got to get rid of two. I think that's neutrality of taxation or neutrality of your budget, and say to your team, find a solution. I think that's a good message to say, look, you know, if we can bring the taxes down, that's great. But at this point, we're certainly not bringing them going up. So if you're going to do anything that's going to cost money, you got to go find some money somewhere else that we can remove. And I think that's a good challenge for any politician, wherever you sit, because guess what? If you're creative and you start thinking about these things and you start looking around, you go, hey, what's this over here? Like, why are we still paying? I mean, we do that even individually, don't you? You sit there going,
yeah,
I've been paying for this. What is this thing I'm paying for every month? I've forgotten about that. I should probably get rid of that. And when I'm looking at my finances, thinking, how do I get more money? Oh, guess what? If I cancel like my five different subscriptions.
Right. Netflix, my $500 worth of streaming services and cable bill that, you know.
Thank God we don't have to worry about cable anymore. Oh, wait a minute.
Wait a tick. Hold on a second. And then we get to the one movie we want to watch and it's $26.99.
That's right. That's the future. That's actually what Vancouver did. They did this thing called fee for service. And so they simultaneously, I would fight this when I was in council. They were saying, oh, we're going to do this thing where it's, you know, fee for service. So we'll start charging extra for water and stuff like that. That will help us reduce taxes. Guess what never happened? They never reduced the taxes. So they would go and take it over here saying they were going to do this because they wanted to reduce taxation, but they never reduced. They never.
Of course not. Once the tax is in, it doesn't go away.
No,
it doesn't.
Double dipping.
Of course it is. Oh gosh, we could get the double dipping on. We have so much to get to, and we've only got so much time, George. So, that is the lay of the land ish at the federal level. We did hear from Premier David Eby yesterday. He put out, you know, sort of a statement, but a video statement of how he is on side with Canada First, with the premiers. So it looks like all but one premier.
Yes, I know. And that's Alberta. They love America. They would be. They would be. You know, they're like, all right, let's join. I mean, every Albertan I know, like, they just would be happy to be. Pay me $1 million and I'll become American. So I hear that a lot, right, my Alberta friends. I'm like, what? I feel like EB's kind of been invisible this whole, it hasn't really resonated. You look at, you know, Ontario and Alberta seem to be leading the way here as far as.
He needs some wins. He needs some strong wins. I agree with you that it's been very neutral. Like, it's almost, I'm just going to be over here and just be really quiet and just, you know, yeah. I'm here. I'm going to look out for us.
Yeah. Whereas I think 80 to 90% of British Columbians don't like Trump. I mean, I think of all the provinces,
totally,
probably the along with Quebec, the most against Trump. So, right. And that's
give British Columbians a reason. Yeah. And really, as a province of with our own natural resources that will be in very high demand in the United States, certainly in California. I mean, they're going to need some lumber,
electricity, and oil and gas.
All of it. I have to say, back to the wildfires, though, I do love watching, you know, teams from Canada and Mexico come in and just be like, here, we're here to help you.
You saw that one TikTok with a guy going, go USA, go. It's one of our planes landing, getting the water. I'm like, dude, it's a Canadian crew. Anyways, America.
Wild.
Yeah. Speaking of, we got an election coming up here in Vancouver.
We do. April 5th, right? April 5th.
That's what you say. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I heard that this morning.
I've heard April 20th. I've heard June. But okay, April 5th. That's soon. And we have one. We're going to have two spots because as of yesterday, which would have been Wednesday, Adrienne Carr, as she had alluded to in December, and as I think I said last week that she for sure was going to do it from my sources, has decided not to continue. And has taken advantage of this opportunity because we're going to have a by-election. So there's no extra cost to the taxpayers for us to have two people.
Right.
She's bailing. And you know, first of all, I want to say that I worked with Adrienne for 7 years. And she is a really, I mean, I don't agree with her, obviously, on a lot of things.
Right.
But she is a hardworking representative for the people of Vancouver. And I thank her for her, I mean, 14 years of service. Come on. That is above and beyond, and I wish her the best of luck. And I know she's got, you know, grandkids. She's got, you know, her husband. That, you know, it's time. It's time. She knows it's time, and she wants to take advantage of this opportunity. So good luck to her. But hey, by election, what's going to happen?
I want to thank her as well because I've watched, really, you know, a pretty tightly perched seat of watching the municipal landscape shift and change, and one need not agree, as you say, with the politics and policies that each politician puts forward, but to have that personal, you know, putting yourself out there, especially in this very difficult she has been in it in some of the most tumultuous times, to be where she was. And I say that about, you know, city councilors, yourself. That's how we got to know each other. Mm-hmm. You and I are very different politically, but we have some things that dovetail. And the more we talk, the more we see where our common ground is. And sometimes we butt heads, but, you know, we learn at the other side of it. And so to all people who step up and put themselves out there politically, I tip my hat because I get asked a lot if I'm going to get into politics. And the answer is hell no, because of how much it takes from your physical well-being and your family and the polarization that comes with it, especially now. So,
well, and you know, and to what Adrienne's saying, you know, it really is quite often what happens in the chamber, the torture that you went through. She and I had 7 years of Vision Vancouver where,
right,
you know, the beatings you get for hours and hours from your fellow counselors who were there, you know, in spirit to do the same thing to make the city great. You know, it's so she's been doing that for twice as long as I did. And so I know how she feels, and it's probably twice as bad because it's been twice as long. And not to ever have, and especially since they took her off all these committees, and that was my frustration,
right,
when I was there, that they even if I had a good idea, they would ruin it or not allow it because you know,
didn't have a win.
They want to take credit for it. But I, you know, I look at some of the wins. I walk around the city, go, oh, that was because of me, even though nobody will ever know it.
Right. I love that you tell me those things, though, and I'm sure that it'll be a nice exhale for her.
Yeah.
But where do we go with this by-election? Who do you see stepping up? And
I don't know. I mean, I think there's an opportunity for the NPA to kind of make a resurgence with the right people. I don't think the brand of ABC is particularly strong right now. And generally, as you know, in by-elections, the incumbent party doesn't do well. One city is kind of invisible. You know, so I would say it's an opportunity for the Green Party if they have some candidates to get in there, two spots, they could, you know. But then I look at the ABC and I see them as more left than Vision. They're like Vision 2.0. So I don't know how much more left we're going to go. I think there's an opportunity to go to the right of the spectrum to really talk about crime and those kinds of things and address those things in the city and the budget and say, look, you said you're an accountant. You came in here, you're a CGA. And I just got my, I don't know if you just got your tax bill. I got it this week.
I did.
I'm up by two, like a lot, like, well, let's say 10% increase on my tax bill. 10%. The bottom line, like, that's crazy. In 1 year, come on. And we have averaging, so you can only imagine if we didn't have averaging how bad it would be. So I just think the competence level on the budget side of this council has proven to be very, very weak. And I think that's an opportunity for somebody to get in there and say, well, let's take a look at the books. And I'm they're not transparent. They're less transparent than Vision. And I think that's what Adrian talked about, the opaqueness and Pete Fry. So if you really ride those two issues, I think there's an opportunity for the right, you know. And I think I would say that if one party can really figure out how to build a campaign, they should be able to win both seats.
What do you think the political football will be in the by-election, though, from the left of center side then? Is it the, look at all these developers, or, you know, what will the shrill call to action perhaps? Because sometimes it does smack of just, you know, and you and I have talked about gentle density versus towers versus da-da-da, but we've also talked about the need for a plan and for housing, and we can't talk about housing people on one hand and then push back on building things for people to live in on the other hand. Like, there's what that becomes a political football in my mind, because I think there are people with really good ideas on both ends of the political spectrum, but when we come to times of campaigns, things become spun, which is...
Yes.
Why we're here to take the spin out. What do you think? You just said what it would be from the right of center. What will the left of center push, do you think?
It's interesting because I don't think their messages resonating right now in our world. I think you see this across every election. That people are tired of talking about that stuff, about the environment. They're tired of talking about homelessness. They're tired of talking about things that, of course, matter, but they just want, they're looking at how much money they have right now. Everybody's thinking about that because of inflation and after COVID and all this stuff. That's what people are talking about. So I don't think that the left is going to have a message that's going to resonate to the voters of the city. It would be surprising. I mean, is the Green Party going to go in there and say, we want to do more environmental things and expand our green footprint in the city, or blah, blah, blah? Like, no, you're not. Let's disband. Like, let's forget about it. Disband and exit that campaign because that's not working and it's costing us too much money. So it'll depend. I think it's an opportunity. There's no front runner or person who is going to be taking on Ken Sim next year. I think that's an opportunity for somebody to get in there and raise their profile. Obviously, ABC person wants to be the mayor, but they got a mayor. So who's going to be the opposition to Ken Sim in next year? It's only 1 year away. So that'll be
interesting
to see. So I think that's an opportunity for, I think, the NPA, because they have, you know, you might say it's a tarnished brand, but it's a brand. Yeah, I've said that for years.
But at the end of the day, when it comes to municipal politics, brand recognition is really everything. When you consider that a mayor in Vancouver anyway is often elected by a majority of 30% of eligible voters. Like, it's the majority of a minority. It's tiny. So if you can just get your brand through the noise, I mean,
right. That's right.
That's why the placards standing on a street corner and flashing it, it's like, just vote this name. You know, 100%. It's like, oh, I saw that name driving home from work every day, so I better vote for that person. They seem organized.
There's a reason I did well. First, that time, in part because my name is famous and I was on top of the ballot, Second time, though, was because I was always talking to you and other journalists and had my name out there all the time and came in second behind Adrienne Carr in my second election. So, you know, I was second to last. She was last. We both came to the top because we both were saying a lot of the same things at that time, which was transparency and, you know, and the budget transparency and overall transparency. That was our messaging.
The openness to talk with those that you disagree with. Like, that's what resonated with me when I didn't know you as a person. When you first asked me out for lunch, those years ago, when you first said, like, let's meet for a bite to eat, as we had talked on the radio many times. I'm like, sure. Okay. Sure. You seem, you know, cool. And then we sit and we chit chat and we got into the like towers versus gentle density, I believe, was our first real like.
Next thing you know, we got a podcast.
What? Next thing you know, we got a podcast. And then we talked for a couple of years about that. And then I've kind of seen what you meant. But you've had this like, but do you see if we just, it doesn't need to be, you know, we won't immediately turn into Burnaby. We can look a little bit of Richmond/Ladner, but we need to move things around. Like the zoning needs to happen and everybody needs to stop freaking out. We could talk about that for the rest of the day. But I want to get one more thing in about Park Board.
Yes. Oh God, no Park Board.
So there's a thing that's stalled right now that is really set up to, sorry, I had it on my phone here and then it went away. One second. In preparation. So it's a Vancouver artist and athletes are stepping up to take this place that's already a gathering spot for young people to play soccer at Sunset Beach. It's like a pad, play pad there. And there's this whole conversation there. Like Christine Sinclair's involved. There's big money sponsors. This is not a line item to add to the budget of anything. It just needs approval. And it's stalled because of the fight between Vancouver Park Board and City Hall. Mm-hmm. Like it's been approved by each independently, but they both have to sign off on it. And because they're not talking to each other or whatever, they can't get this done. And I think it's a bigger news story because, I mean, look on the Global News website, Vancouver artists and athletes step up for Sunset Beach FC soccer community. That's what it's called, Sunset Beach FC.
The way I read this is we are in limbo land then, you know, the City Hall who wants to take over the Park Board, whether you agree with it or not, it looks like it's going to happen. It's just a question of when. And so they basically have neutered the current Park Board in its role. And the city is just waiting for the takeover. So why approve anything until they have
until it's done. Control
over it? Except for the fact that process.
Except for the fact that we're still paying for it. We're still paying all those people.
I know.
Right? That's the part that's just like, okay, come on. Stop wasting time.
Well, we won't save
it. Get it done.
I don't think just for those who, maybe we'll save a couple million bucks if we get rid of the park.
I'll take it. I'll take that couple million. Anyway, we got to go.
We got to go.
That's it. Yeah, I know we did. We went long because I had to fit in my little park board thing because it pisses me off. Sunset Beach FC.
Let's do it. Park board in the next election. Oh, darn, it won't exist.
Darn it. Won't they need somebody to oversee parks? No.
Jody Vance as the park board.
George.
Who would it be? George, the CEO of the department. There you go.
George Affleck for mayor, and it could happen. At George underscore Affleck on your Twitter. Everywhere else, you're just George Affleck. And I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, everywhere. Everywhere. Are you going to stay on TikTok if it gets banned in the U.S.?
I mean, I'm just a viewer. I do a few posts on there. I'm not prolific and on any social media right now, but I love it. It's like watching TV. It's like the 1970s when I was a kid sitting there like.
That's true. That looked like my son right there. Interesting.
Replace a remote control with my phone now, but it's the same thing. You're just holding this thing going click, 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 click.
Yeah. Flip.
Click, click,
flip. Flip. Every now and then you go, oh, Gilligan's Island.
In fact, I watch those TikToks.
Bye, George.
Yeah, bye.